Eladonna, we've got that punk, what's his name, Gordon? He tied the string in the pants. I want to go at him again, see if he can remember anything about when he last saw Julia Matthews. He leaned his hand against the table. I don't think he knows where she is, but maybe he saw something. Lena turned around without being told. We found Julia Matthews.
What?
He asked. When? She showed up at the hospital last night, Lena answered. There was something about her voice that sent a sense of dread coursing through his veins. He sat back down on the bed without even thinking about it. Lena closed the door and narrated last night's events for him. By the time she was finished, Jeffrey was pacing the room in an awkward gait.
She just showed up on Sarah's car?
He asked. Lena nodded.
Where is it now?
He asked.
The car, I mean.
Frank had it impounded, Lena said, a defensive tone to her voice.
Where is Frank?
Jeffrey asked, leaning his hand on the bed railing. Lena was silent, then,
I don't know.
He gave her a hard look, thinking she knew exactly where Frank was but wouldn't say. She said, He put Brad on guard upstairs.
Gordon's still in jail, right?
Yeah, that was the first thing I checked. He was in jail all night. There's no way he could have put her on Sarah's car. Jeffrey hit the bed with his fist. He knew last night he shouldn't have taken that Demerol. This was the middle of a case, not a holiday.
Hand me my jacket.
Jeffrey held his hand out, taking the jacket from Lena. He limped out of the room, Lena on his heels. The elevator was slow in coming, but neither of them spoke. She's been sleeping all night, Lena said.
Right.
Jeffrey jabbed at the button. The elevator bell dinged several seconds later, and they rode up together, still in silence. Lena began.
About last night, the shooting?
Jeffrey waved her off, stepping out of the elevator.
We'll deal with that later, Lena.
It's just... He held his hand up.
You have no idea how little that matters to me right now,
he said, using the railing lining the hallway to work his way toward Brad.
Hey, Chief,
Brad said, standing up from his chair.
Nobody in?
Jeffrey asked, motioning for him to sit down.
Not since Dr. Linton around 2 this morning, he answered.
Jeffrey said, Good, leaning his hand on Brad's shoulder as he opened the door. Julia Matthews was awake. She stared blindly out the window, not moving when they came in.
Miss Matthews?
He said, leaning his hand against the railing of her bed. She continued to stare, not answering. Lena said, She hasn't spoken since Sarah took the tube out. He looked out the window, wondering what held her attention. Dawn had broken about 30 minutes ago, but other than the clouds, there wasn't anything remarkable to see out the window. Jeffrey repeated,
Miss Matthews?
Tears streamed down her face, but still she said nothing. He left the room, using Lena's arm to lean on. As soon as they were outside the room, Lena provided, She hasn't said anything all night.
Not one word?
She shook her head. We got an emergency number from the college and found an aunt. She's tracking down the parents. They're flying into Atlanta on the first available flight.
When's that?
Jeffrey asked, checking his watch. Around 3 today.
Frank and I will pick them up,
he said, turning to Brad Stevens.
Brad, you've been on all night?
Yes, sir.
Lena will relieve you in a couple of hours.
He looked at Lena, daring her to protest. When nothing came, he said,
Take me home, then back to the station. You can walk to the hospital from there.
Jeffrey stared straight ahead as Lena drove to his house, trying to work his mind around what had happened last night. He felt a tension in his neck that even a handful of aspirin couldn't tame. He still could not shake the lethargy from being drugged last night, and his brain was getting sidetracked left and right, even as he came to accept that all this had happened 3 doors down from where he lay sleeping like a baby. Thank God Sarah had been there,
or he would have had two victims instead of one on his hands. Julia Matthews proved that the killer was escalating. He had gone from a quick assault and murder in the bathroom to keeping a girl for a few days so that he could take his time with her. Jeffrey had seen this kind of behavior over and over again. Serial rapists learned from their mistakes. Their lives were spent figuring out the best way to obtain their objectives. And this rapist, this murderer, was honing his skills even now as Jeffrey and Lena talked about how to catch him. He had Lena repeat her story about Julia Matthews, trying to see if it was any different in the telling, trying to pull out additional clues. There were none. Lena was very good at reporting things as she saw them, and nothing new came with the second telling. Jeffrey asked, "What happened after?" "After Sarah left?" He nodded. "Dr. Headley came from Augusta. He closed her up." Jeffrey became aware of the fact that throughout Lena's narration of events of the night before, she was using her instead of the woman's name. It was common in law enforcement to look at the criminal rather than the victim, and Jeffrey always felt that this was the quickest way to lose sight of why they did the job in the first place. He didn't want Lena to do this, especially considering what had happened to her sister. There was something different about Lena today. Whether it was a higher level of tension or anger, he could not say. Her body seemed to vibrate with it. And his main goal was to get her back to the hospital where she could sit and decompress. He knew Lena would not leave her guard at Julia Matthews' bedside. The hospital was the only place to trust her to stay. There was, of course, the added bonus of knowing that if Lena did finally have some sort of nervous breakdown, she was in the right place. For now, he needed to use her. He needed her to be his eyes and ears for what happened last night. He said, "Tell me what Julia looked like." Lena tapped the horn, shooing a squirrel out of the road. "Well, she looked normal." Lena paused. "I mean, I thought it was an OD or something from the way she looked. I never would have pegged her for a rape." "What convinced you otherwise?" Lena's jaw worked again. "Dr. Linton, I suppose." She pointed out the holes in her hands and feet. "I must have been blind, I don't know. The bleach smell and all of that gave it away." "All of what?" "Just, you know, physical signs that something wasn't right." Lena paused again. Her tone took a defensive ring. "She had her mouth taped shut, with her driver's license shoved down her throat. I suppose she looked raped, but I wasn't seeing it. I don't know why. I would have figured it out. I'm not stupid. It's just that she looked so normal, you know? Not like a rape victim." He was surprised by this last part. "What does a rape victim look like?" Lena shrugged. "Like my sister, I guess," she mumbled. "Like somebody who can't really take care of themselves." Jeffrey had been expecting a physical description, some comment on the state of Julia Matthews' body. He said, "I don't follow you." "Never mind." "No," Jeffrey said, "tell me." Lena seemed to think over how to phrase her words, then, "I guess I can understand with Sybil because she was blind." She stopped. "I mean, there's this whole thing about women asking for it and all. I don't think Sybil was like that, but I know rapists. I've talked to them, I've busted them. I know how they think. They don't pick somebody who they think is going to put up a fight." "You think so?" Lena shrugged. "I guess you can go into all that feminist bullshit about how women should be able to do whatever they want to do and men should just get used to it, but..." Lena paused again. "It's like this," she said. "If I parked my car in the middle of Atlanta with the windows rolled down and the keys in the ignition, whose fault is it when somebody steals it?" Jeffrey didn't quite get her logic. "There are sexual predators out there," Lena continued. "Everybody knows there are some sick people, usually men, who prey on women. and they're not picking the ones who look like they can take care of themselves. They're picking the ones who won't or can't put up a fight. They're picking the quiet ones like Julia Matthews or the handicapped ones, Lena added. Like my sister. Jeffrey stared at her, not sure he bought her logic. Lena surprised him sometimes, but what she had just said blew him out of the water. He would expect this kind of talk from someone like Matt Hogan, but never from a woman. Not even Lena. He leaned his head against the headrest, quiet for a few beats. After a while, he asked, "Run down the case for me. Julia Matthews, give me the physicals." Lena took her time answering. Her front teeth were knocked out. Her ankles had been bound. Her pubic hair had been shaved off. Lena paused. Then, you know, he'd cleaned her out on the inside. Bleach? Lena nodded. Mouth, too. Jeffrey watched her closely. What else? There was no bruising on her, Lena indicated her lap. No defensive wounds or marks on her hands, other than the holes in her palms and the bruises from the straps. Jeffrey considered this. Julia Matthews had probably been drugged the entire time, though that didn't make sense to him either. Rape was a crime of violence, and most rapists got off more from causing women pain, controlling them, than actually having sex with them. Jeffrey said, "Tell me what else. What did Julia look like when you found her?" "She looked like a normal person," Lena answered. "I told you that."
"Naked?"
"Yeah, naked. She was totally naked, and she was laid out like, with her hands straight out. Her feet were crossed at the ankles, right across the hood of the car."
"Do you think she was placed like that for a reason?"
Lena answered.
"I don't know.
Everybody knows Dr. Linton. Everybody knows what car she drives. It's the only one in town." Jeffrey felt his stomach lurch. This was not the response he had been fishing for. He'd meant for Lena to specifically address the positioning of the body, to draw the same conclusion he had, which was that the woman was displayed in a crucifixion pose. He had assumed Sarah's car was chosen because it had been parked closest to the hospital where someone would see it. The possibility that this action was directed toward Sarah was chilling. Jeffrey dismissed these thoughts for a moment, quizzing Lena. "What do we know about our rapist?" Lena thought out her answer. "Okay. He's white because rapists tend to rape within their own ethnic group. He's super retentive because she was scrubbed thoroughly with bleach. Bleach means he's up on his forensics because that's the best way to dispose of physical evidence. He's probably an older man, has his own house because he obviously nailed her to some floor or wall or whatever, and it's not like you can do that in an apartment building, so he must be established in town. He's probably not married, because he'd have a lot of explaining to do if his wife came home and found a woman nailed down in the basement."
"Why do you say basement?"
Lena shrugged again. "I don't imagine he can keep her out in the open, even if he lives alone." "Not unless he's sure nobody's gonna drop by."
"So he's a loner."
"Well, maybe, but then how did he meet her?"
"Good point," Jeffrey said. "Did Sarah send blood for the tox screen?"
"Yeah," Lena said. "She drove it over to Augusta. At least that's where she said she was going. She said she knew what she was looking for."
Jeffrey pointed to a side street. "There."
Lena made a sharp turn. "Are we going to cut Gordon loose today?" she asked.
"I don't think so," Jeffrey said. "We can use the drug charge to get his cooperation on who Julia's been hanging around with. From what Jenny Price said, he kept her on a tight leash. He'd be the most likely person to notice who was new in her life."
"Yeah?" Lena agreed.
"Up here on the right," he instructed, sitting up. "You want to come in?"
Lena sat behind the wheel. "I'll stay here, thanks." Jeffrey sat back in his seat.
"There's something else you're not telling me, isn't there?"
She took a deep breath, then let it go. I feel like I let you down.
About last night? He asked. Then, me getting shot?
She said, there's things you don't know. Jeffrey put his hand on the door handle.
Is Frank taking care of it?
She nodded.
Could you have stopped what happened?
She shrugged, her shoulders going up to her ears. I don't know if I can stop anything anymore.
Good thing that's not your job, he said.
He wanted to say more to her, to take some of her load, but Jeffrey knew from experience that Lena would have to work this out for herself. She had spent the last 33 years building a fortress around herself. He wasn't about to break through it in 3 days. Instead, he said,
Lena, my number one focus right now is to find out who killed your sister and who raped Julia Matthews. This, he indicated his leg, I can deal with when it's over. I think we both know where to start looking. It's not like they're all gonna leave town.
He pushed the door open and physically lifted his injured leg out with his hand.
Jesus Christ.
He groaned, feeling an intense protest from his knee. His leg had gotten stiff from sitting in the car for so long. By the time Jeffrey stood up from the car, a line of perspiration beaded over his lip. Pain shot through his leg as he walked toward his house. His house keys were on the same ring as the car keys, so he walked to the back of the house, entering through the kitchen. For the last 2 years, Jeffrey had been remodeling the house himself. His latest project was the kitchen, and he had gutted the back wall of the house 1 3-day weekend, planning to have it built back in time to return to work. A shooting had cut his plan short, and he had ended up buying plastic strips from a freezer supply house in Birmingham and nailing them up over the naked 2x4s. The plastic kept the rain and wind out, but meanwhile he still had a big hole at the back of his house. In the living room, Jeffrey picked up the phone and dialed Sarah's number, hoping he could catch her before she left for work. Her machine picked up, so he dialed the Linton house. Eddie Linton answered the phone on the third ring.
Linton and Daughters.
Jeffrey tried to remain pleasant.
Hey, Eddie, it's Jeffrey.
The phone clattered as it was dropped onto the floor. Jeffrey could hear dishes and pans in the background, then muffled conversation. A few seconds later, Sarah picked up the phone. Jeff?
Yeah,
he answered. He could hear her opening the door onto the deck. The Lintons were the only people he knew who didn't have a cordless phone in their house. There was an extension in the bedroom and one in the kitchen. If not for the 10-foot cord the girls had put on the kitchen phone when they were back in high school, privacy would not have been possible. He heard the door close. Then Sarah said,
Sorry. How are you doing?
She skipped an answer, saying, I'm not the one who got shot last night. Jeffrey paused, wondering about the sharp tone to her voice.
I heard about what happened with Julia Matthews.
Right, Sarah said. I ran the blood in Augusta. Belladonna has 2 specific markers. He cut short a chemistry lesson.
You found both of them?
Yes, she answered.
So we're looking for the same guy on both.
Her voice was clipped. Looks that way. A few seconds passed. Then Jeffrey said,
Nick has this guy who's kind of a specialist on belladonna poisoning. He's bringing him by at 10. Can you make it?
I can pop over between patients, but I can't stay long, Sarah offered. There was a change in her voice, something softer when she said, I need to go now, okay?
I want to go over what happened last night.
Later, okay? She didn't give him time to answer. The phone clicked in his ear. Jeffrey let out a sigh as he limped toward the bathroom. On the way, he looked out the window, checking on Lena. She was still in the car, both hands gripping the wheel. It seemed like every woman in his life had something they were hiding today. After a hot shower and shave, Jeffrey felt considerably better. His leg was still stiff, but the more he moved it, the less it hurt. There was something to be said for staying mobile. The drive to the station was tense and quiet, the only noise in the car being the sound of Lena's teeth gritting. Jeffrey was glad to see the back of her as she walked toward the hospital. Marla met him at the front door, her hands clasped in front of her chest.
I'm so glad you're okay,
she said, taking his arm, leading him back toward his office. He put a stop to her fussing when she opened the door for him.
I've got it, Jeffrey said. Where's Frank?
Marla's face fell. If Grant was a small place, its police force was even smaller. Rumors traveled faster within the ranks than a bolt of lightning through a steel rod. Marla said,
I think he's in the back.
Go fetch him for me, will you? Jeffrey asked, making his way into his office. Jeffrey sat in his chair with a groan. He knew he was tempting fate with his leg, keeping it still for a while, but he did not have a choice. His men needed to know he was back on the job, ready to work. Frank rapped his knuckles on the door and Jeffrey nodded him in. Frank asked,
How you doing?
Jeffrey made sure he had the other man's attention.
I'm not going to get shot at anymore, am I?
Frank had the decency to look down at his shoes.
No, sir.
What about Will Harris?
Frank rubbed his chin. I hear he's going to Savannah.
That right?
Yeah,
Frank answered.
Pete gave him a bonus. Will bought himself a bus ticket.
Frank shrugged.
Said he was going to spend a couple of weeks with his daughter.
What about his house?
Some fellas at the lodge volunteered to take care of the window.
Good, Jeffrey said. Sarah's going to want her car back. Did you find anything? Frank took a plastic evidence bag out of his pocket and set it down on the desk.
What's this?
Jeffrey asked, but it was a stupid question. There was a Ruger 357 Magnum in the bag.
It was under her seat, Frank said.
Sarah's seat? He asked, still not getting it. The gun was a man-stopper, the caliber enough to blow a hole into someone's chest.
In her car? This is hers?
Frank shrugged.
She doesn't have a permit for it.
Jeffrey stared at the gun as if it could talk to him. Sarah certainly wasn't against private citizens having weapons, but he knew for a fact that she wasn't exactly comfortable around guns, especially the kind that could shoot the lock off a barn door. He slipped the gun out of the bag, checking it.
Serial numbers were filed off, Frank said.
Yeah. Jeffrey answered. He could see that.
Was it loaded?
Yep.
Frank was obviously impressed with the weapon.
Ruger Security 6. Stainless steel. That's a custom handle, too.
Jeffrey dropped the gun into his desk drawer, then looked back at Frank.
Anything on the sex offender lists yet?
Frank seemed disappointed that the discussion about Sarah's gun was over. He answered,
Not really. Most of them have some kind of alibi. The ones who don't aren't really what we're looking for.
We've got a meeting at 10 with Nick Shelton. He's got a specialist on Belladonna. Maybe we can give the guy something more to look for after that. Frank took a seat.
I've got that nightshade in my own backyard.
Me too, Jeffrey said. Then, I want to head over to the hospital after the meeting, see if Julia Matthews feels like talking. He paused, thinking about the young girl.
Her parents will be in around 3. I want to be at the airport to meet them. You're riding shotgun with me today.
If Frank found Jeffrey's word choice funny, he did not comment. Chapter 15. Sarah left the clinic at 9:45 so that she could go by the pharmacy before she saw Jeffrey. There was a chill in the air, and the clouds promised more rain. She tucked her hands into her pockets as she walked down the street, keeping her eyes on the sidewalk in front of her, hoping her posture and her pace would make her seem unapproachable.
She needn't have bothered, though. Since Sybil's death, downtown had taken on an eerie quiet.
It was as if the whole town had died with her. Sarah knew how they felt. All night, Sarah had lain awake in bed, going over each step she had taken with Julia Matthews. No matter what she did, Sarah kept seeing the girl laid out on her car, her hands and feet pierced, her eyes glazed as she stared without seeing the night sky. Sarah never wanted to go through anything like that again. The bell over the pharmacy door jingled as Sarah walked in, breaking her out of her solitude.
"Hey, Dr. Linton,"
Marty Ringo called from behind the checkout counter. Her head was bent down, reading a magazine. Marty was a plump woman with an unfortunate mole growing just above her right eyebrow. Black hairs shot out from it like bristles on a brush. Working in the pharmacy, she knew the latest gossip about anyone and everyone in town. Marty would be certain to mention to whoever wandered into the store next that Sarah Linton made a special trip to see Jeb today. Marty smiled slyly.
"You looking for Jeb?"
"Yes," Sarah answered.
"Heard about last night,"
Marty said, obviously fishing for information.
"That's a college girl, huh?"
Sarah nodded, because that much could be found from the paper. Marty's voice lowered.
"Heard she was messed with."
"Hmm," Sarah answered, looking around the store. "Is he here?" she asked.
"They both looked alike, too."
"What's that?" Sarah asked, suddenly paying attention.
"Both them girls," Marty said. "You think there's some kind of connection?"
Sarah cut the conversation short. "I really need to talk to Jeb."
"He's out back."
Marty pointed toward the pharmacy, a hurt expression on her face. Sarah thanked Marty with a forced smile as she made her way toward the back of the store. Sarah had always liked being in the pharmacy. She had bought her first tube of mascara here. On weekends, her father used to drive them to the store for candy. Not much had changed since Jeb bought the place. The soda counter, which was more for show than for serving drinks, still shone from polish. Contraceptives were still kept behind the counter. The narrow aisles up and down the length of the store were still labeled with signs made from marker and poster board. Sarah peered over the pharmacy counter but didn't see Jeb. She noticed the back door was open, and with a look over her shoulder, she walked behind the counter. "Jeb?" she called. There was no response, and Sarah walked to the open door. Jeb was standing to the side, his back to Sarah. She tapped him on the shoulder and he jumped.
"God!"
he yelled, turning around quickly. The fear on his face was replaced by pleasure when he saw Sarah. He laughed.
"You scared the crap out of me."
"I'm sorry," Sarah apologized. But the truth was, she was glad he could get worked up over something. "What were you doing?" He pointed to a row of bushes lining the long parking lot behind the buildings.
"See in that bush?"
Sarah shook her head, not seeing anything but bushes. Then, "Oh," as she saw a small bird nest.
"Finches,"
Jeb said.
"I put a feeder out there last year, but some kids from the school took it away."
Sarah turned toward him. "About last night," she began. He waved her off.
"Please, Sarah, believe me, I understand. You were with Jeffrey a long time."
"Thank you," she said, meaning it. Jeb looked back into the pharmacy, lowering his voice.
"I'm sorry about what happened, too. You know, with the girl."
He shook his head slowly side to side.
"It's just hard to think about things like that happening in your own town."
"I know," Sarah answered, not really wanting to get into it.
"I guess I can forgive you, skipping out on our date to save somebody's life."
He put his hand over the right side of his chest.
"Did you really put your hand on her heart?"
Sarah moved his hand to the left side. "Yes."
"Good Lord," Jeb breathed. "How did it feel?"
Sarah gave him the truth. "Scary," she said. "Very scary." His voice was filled with admiration when he said,
"You are a remarkable woman, Sarah. Do you know that?"
She felt silly being praised. "I'll give you a rain check if you want," she offered, trying to move him off the topic of Julia Matthews. "For our date, I mean." He smiled, genuinely pleased.
"That'd be great."
A breeze came and Sarah rubbed her arms. "It's getting cold again."
"Here."
He led her back inside, shutting the door behind them.
You doing anything this weekend?
I don't know, Sarah said. Then, listen, I came to see if Jeffrey picked up his medication.
Well?
Jeb clasped his hands together.
I guess that means you're busy this weekend.
No, it doesn't. Sarah paused, then said, It's just complicated.
Yeah.
He forced a smile.
No problem. I'll check his script.
She couldn't stand to see the disappointment on his face. She turned the medic alert display to give herself something to do. Bookmarks with religious sayings were alongside diabetes bracelets. Jeb opened a large drawer under the counter and pulled out an orange pill bottle. He double-checked the label, then said,
He called it in but didn't pick it up yet.
Thanks, Sarah managed, taking the bottle. She held it in her hand, staring at Jeb. She spoke before she could back out of it. Why don't you call me, she asked, about this weekend?
Yeah, I will.
She reached out with her free hand, smoothing the lapel of his lab coat. I mean it, Jeb. Call me. He was quiet for a few seconds, then suddenly he leaned down, kissing her lightly on the lips.
I'll call you tomorrow.
Great, Sarah said. She realized she was gripping the pill bottle so tightly that the top was about to pop off. She had kissed Jeb before. It was really no big deal. Something in the back of her mind was scared that Marty would see, though. Something in her mind was scared that the news of the kiss would get back to Jeffrey.
I can give you a bag for that, Jeb offered, pointing to the bottle.
No, Sarah mumbled, tucking the bottle into her jacket pocket. She murmured a thanks and was out the door before Marty could look up from her magazine. Jeffrey and Nick Shelton were out in the hall when Sarah got to the station. Nick stood with his hands tucked into the back pockets of his jeans, his regulation GBI dark blue dress shirt tight across his chest. His non-regulation beard and mustache were trimmed neatly to his face, and his equally forbidden gold rope chain was hanging from his neck. At just under 5'6", he was short enough for Sarah to rest her chin on the top of his head. This had not prevented him from asking her out a number of times.
Hey, girl,
Nick said, putting his arm around her waist. Jeffrey had about as much to worry about competition-wise from Nick Shelton as he did from a reindeer. But he still seemed to bristle at the familiar way Nick held her. Sarah thought Nick was overly solicitous for this very reason.
Why don't we start the meeting? Jeffrey grumbled. Sarah has to get back to work.
Sarah caught up with Jeffrey as they walked down the hallway toward the back. She tucked the pill bottle into his coat pocket.
What's this?
He asked, taking it out. Then,
oh.
Oh, Sarah repeated, opening the door. Frank Wallace and a reedy-looking young man in his khakis and a shirt like Nick's were sitting in the briefing room when they entered. Frank stood, shaking Nick's hand. He gave Sarah a firm nod, which she did not return. Something told Sarah that Frank had a hand in what happened last night, and she did not like it.
This is Mark Webster, Nick said, indicating the other man.
He was a boy, really, hardly older than 21. He had that still wet behind the ears look about him, and a piece of his hair stuck out in the back in a classic cowlick. Nice to meet you, Sarah said, shaking his hand. It was like squeezing a fish, but if Nick had brought Mark Webster all the way down here from Macon, he couldn't be as goofy as he looked.
Frank said, Why don't you tell them what you were telling me?
The boy cleared his throat and actually tugged at his collar. He addressed his words towards Sarah.
I was saying it's interesting your twist picked belladonna for his drug of choice. It's very unusual. I've only seen 3 cases in my work, and most of those were rule-outs, stupid kids who thought they'd have some fun.
Sarah nodded her head, knowing that rule-outs meant ruling out foul play and a death. As a coroner, as well as a pediatrician, she was especially careful when young children came into the morgue, with cause of death unknown. Mark leaned against the table, addressing his remarks to the rest of the group.
Belladonna is in the deadly nightshade family. During the Middle Ages, women chewed small quantities of the seeds in order to dilate their pupils. A woman with dilated eyes was considered more attractive, and that's where they got the name, Belladonna. It means beautiful woman.
Sarah supplied. Both victims had extremely dilated pupils.
Even a slight dose would cause this, Mark answered.
He picked up a white Tyvek envelope and pulled out some photographs, which he handed to Jeffrey to circulate.
Mark said, Belladonna is bell-shaped, usually purple, and smells kind of funny. It's not something you'd keep around in your yard if you had kids or small animals. Whoever is growing it probably has a fence around it, maybe 3 feet tall at the least, in order to keep from poisoning everybody around.
Does it need any specific kind of soil or feed?
Jeffrey asked, passing the photo to Frank.
It's a weed. It can grow practically anywhere. That's what makes it so popular. The only thing is, it's a bad drug.
Mark paused at this.
The high is prolonged, lasts about 3 to 4 hours, depending on how much you take. Users report very real hallucinations. A lot of times they'll actually think it happened, if they can remember it.
Sarah asked, It causes amnesia?
Oh, yes, ma'am. Selective amnesia, which means they only remember bits and pieces. Like, she might remember it was a man that took her, but she won't remember what he looked like, even if she was staring him in the face. Or she might say he was purple with green eyes.
He paused.
It's a hallucinogen, but not like your typical PCP or LSD. Users report that there's no discerning between the hallucination and the real thing. With, say, angel dust, ecstasy, what have you, you know you're hallucinating. Belladonna makes everything seem real. If I gave you a cup of Datura when you came around, you might swear to me you had a conversation with the coat rack. I could hook you up to a lie detector, and you'd come out as telling the truth. It takes things that are there in reality and puts a twist on them.
Tea? Jeffrey asked, giving Sarah a look.
Yes, sir. Kids have been boiling it in tea to drink.
He clasped his hands behind him.
I've got to tell you, though, it's dangerous stuff, real easy to OD on.
Sarah asked, How else can you ingest it?
If you've got the patience, Mark answered, you can soak the leaves in alcohol for a couple of days, then evaporate it. It's still a crapshoot, though, because the consistency isn't guaranteed, even with people who grow it for medical purposes.
What medical purposes? Jeffrey asked.
Well, you know, when you go to the eye doctor and he dilates your eyes. It's a belladonna compound, very diluted, but it's belladonna. You couldn't take a couple of bottles of the eye drops and kill somebody, for instance. At this low level of concentration, the worst you could do is give them a really bad headache and killer constipation. It's at the pure level that you have to be careful.
Frank bumped her arm, handing her the photograph. Sarah looked down at the plant. It looked pretty much like every plant she had ever seen. Sarah was a doctor, not a horticulturalist. She couldn't even grow a chia pet. Without warning, her mind was racing again, thinking back to when she first found Julia Matthews on her car. She was trying to remember if the duct tape had been there. With sudden clarity, Sarah remembered that it had. She could see the tape on the woman's mouth. She could see Julia Matthews' body crucified on the hood of the car.
Sarah?
Jeffrey asked.
Hmm?
Sarah looked up. Everyone was staring at her as if they were anticipating a response to something. I'm sorry, she apologized. What was it you asked?
Mark answered. I asked if you noticed anything strange about the victims. Were they unable to speak? Did they have a blank stare?
Sarah handed back the photo. Sybil Adams was blind, she provided, so of course her stare was blank. Julia Matthews, she paused, trying to force the image from her mind. Her eyes were glazed. I imagine it was from being gorked out on this drug more than anything else. Jeffrey gave her a funny look.
Mark mentioned something about belladonna interfering with vision. There's a sort of blindsidedness, Mark said in a tone that implied he was repeating himself. According to user reports, you can see, but
your mind can't make out what it is you're seeing? Like, I could show you an apple or an orange, and you would be aware that you were seeing something round, maybe textured, but your brain wouldn't recognize what it is?
I know what blindsidedness is, Sarah returned, realizing too late that her tone was condescending. She tried to cover for this by saying, Do you think Sybil Adams experienced this? Maybe that's why she didn't scream out?
Mark looked at the other men. Obviously, this was another thing he had covered while Sarah was zoning out.
There's been reported loss of voice from the drug. Nothing physically happens in the voice box. There's no physical restraint or damage caused by the drug. I think it's more to do with something happening in the language center of the brain. It has to be similar to whatever causes the sight recognition problems.
Makes sense, Sarah agreed.
Mark continued. Some signs that it's been ingested would be cotton mouth, dilated pupils, high body temperature, elevated heart rate, and difficulty breathing.
Both victims experienced all of those symptoms, Sarah provided. What kind of dose would bring this about?
It's pretty potent stuff. Just one bag of tea can send somebody loopy, especially if they're not recreational drug users. The berries aren't that bad on a scale of things, but anything from the root or the leaf is going to be dangerous, unless you know exactly what you're doing. And then there's no guarantee.
The first victim was a vegetarian, Sarah said.
She was a chemist, too, right? Mark asked. I can think of a million different drugs to fool around with other than belladonna. I don't think anybody who took the time to research it would take that kind of risk. It's Russian roulette, especially if you're dealing with the root. That's the deadliest part. Just a little bit too much from the root and you're gone. There's no known antidote.
I didn't see any signs of drug use in Julia Matthews, she said to Jeffrey. I suppose you're going to interview her after this?
He nodded, then asked Mark,
Anything else?
Mark brushed his fingers through his hair. After the drug, there's noted constipation, still the cotton mouth, sometimes hallucinations. It's interesting to know that the drug was used in a sex crime. Ironic, even.
How's that? Jeffrey asked.
During the Middle Ages, the drug was sometimes inserted with a vaginal applicator so that the rush would come sooner. There are even some people who think the whole myth of witches flying on broomsticks comes from the image of a woman inserting the drug with a wooden applicator.
He smiled. But then we'd have to get into a protracted discussion on deity worshipping and the rise of Christianity in European cultures.
Mark seemed to sense he had lost his audience.
People in drug communities who know about belladonna tend to stay away from it.
He looked at Sarah.
If you'll excuse the language, ma'am.
Sarah shrugged. Between the clinic and her father, she had pretty much heard it all.
Mark still blushed when he said, It's a total mindfuck.
He offered Sarah a smile in apology.
The number one memory, even among users with amnesia, is flying. They really believe they're flying, and they can't understand, even after they come down, that they haven't actually flown.
Jeffrey crossed his arms.
That might explain why she keeps staring out the window.
Has she said anything yet? Sarah asked.
He shook his head.
Nothing.
Then,
we're going to the hospital next if you want to see her.
Sarah looked at her watch, pretending to consider this. There was no way in hell she was going to see Julia Matthews again. It was too much to even think about.
I've got patients, she said.
Jeffrey indicated his office.
Sarah, mind if I talk to you for a second?
Sarah felt the urge to bolt, but she fought it.
Is this about my car?
No.
Jeffrey waited until she was in his office, then shut the door. Sarah sat on the edge of his desk, trying for a casual pose.
I had to take my boat into work this morning, Sarah said. Do you know how cold it is on the lake?
He ignored this, getting straight to the point.
Found your gun.
Oh,
Sarah answered, trying to think of what to say. Of all the things she had been expecting him to say, this was the last one. The Ruger had been in her car for so long that she had forgotten about it.
Am I under arrest?
Where did you get it?
It was a gift.
Jeffrey gave her a hard look.
What? Somebody gave you a .357 with the serial numbers filed off for your birthday?
Sarah shrugged this off.
I've had it for years, Jeffrey.
When did you buy that car, Sarah? A couple of years ago?
I moved it from the old one when I bought it.
He stared at her, not speaking. Sarah could tell that he was mad, but she did not know what to say.
She tried, I've never used it.
That makes me feel good, Sarah, he snapped. You've got a gun in your car capable of literally taking somebody's head off, and you don't know how to use it?
He paused, obviously trying to understand.
What are you gonna do if someone comes after you, huh?
Sarah knew the answer to this, but she did not say.
Jeffrey asked, Why do you have it in the first place?
Sarah studied her ex-husband, trying to figure out the best way to get out of this office without having another fight. She was tired, and she was upset. This wasn't the time to go a few rounds with Jeffrey. Sarah just did not have the fight in her at the moment.
I just had it, she answered.
You don't just have this kind of gun, he said.
I need to get back to the clinic.
She stood, but he was blocking her exit.
Sarah, what the hell is going on?
What do you mean?
His eyes narrowed, but he did not answer. He moved aside, opening the door for her. Sarah thought for a second that it was a trick.
That's it?
She asked. He stepped aside.
It's not like I can beat it out of you.
She put her hand to his chest, feeling guilty.
Jeffrey.
He looked out into the squad room.
I need to go over to the hospital, he said,
obviously dismissing her. Chapter 15. Sarah left the clinic at 9:45 so that she could go by the pharmacy before she saw Jeffrey. There was a chill in the air, and the clouds promised more rain. She tucked her hands into her pockets as she walked down the street, keeping her eyes on the sidewalk in front of her, hoping her posture and her pace would make her seem unapproachable. She needn't have bothered, though. Since Sybil's death, downtown had taken on an eerie quiet. It was as if the whole town had died with her. Sarah knew how they felt. All night, Sarah had lain awake in bed, going over each step she had taken with Julia Matthews. No matter what she did, Sarah kept seeing the girl laid out on her car, her hands and feet pierced, her eyes glazed as she stared without seeing the night sky. Sarah never wanted to go through anything like that again. The bell over the pharmacy door jingled as Sarah walked in, breaking her out of her solitude.
Hey, Dr. Linton.
Marty Ringo called from behind the checkout counter. Her head was bent down, reading a magazine. Marty was a plump woman with an unfortunate mole growing just above her right eyebrow. Black hairs shot out from it like bristles on a brush. Working in the pharmacy, she knew the latest gossip about anyone and everyone in town. Marty would be certain to mention to whoever wandered into the store next that Sarah Linton made a special trip to see Jeb today. Marty smiled slyly.
You looking for Jeb?
Yes, Sarah answered.
Heard about last night,
Marty said, obviously fishing for information.
That's a college girl, huh?
Sarah nodded, because that much could be found from the paper. Marty's voice lowered.
Heard she was messed with.
Sarah answered, looking around the store. Is he here? She asked.
They both looked alike, too.
What's that? Sarah asked, suddenly paying attention.
Both them girls, Marty said. You think there's some kind of connection?
Sarah cut the conversation short. I really need to talk to Jeb.
He's out back.
Marty pointed toward the pharmacy, a hurt expression on her face. Sarah thanked Marty with a forced smile as she made her way toward the back of the store. Sarah had always liked being in the pharmacy. She had bought her first tube of mascara here. On weekends, her father used to drive them to the store for candy. Not much had changed since Jeb bought the place. The soda counter, which was more for show than for serving drinks, still shone from polish.
Contraceptives were still kept behind the counter. The narrow aisles up and down the length of the store were still labeled with signs made from marker and poster board. Sarah peered over the pharmacy counter but didn't see Jeb. She noticed the back door was open, and with a look over her shoulder, she walked behind the counter. "Jeb?" she called. There was no response, and Sarah walked to the open door. Jeb was standing to the side, his back to Sarah. She tapped him on the shoulder, and he jumped.
"God!"
he yelled, turning around quickly. The fear on his face was replaced by pleasure when he saw Sarah. He laughed.
"You scared the crap out of me."
"I'm sorry," Sarah apologized. But the truth was, she was glad he could get worked up over something. "What were you doing?" He pointed to a row of bushes lining the long parking lot behind the buildings.
"See in that bush?"
Sarah shook her head, not seeing anything but bushes. Then, "Oh," as she saw a small bird nest.
"Finches," Jeb said. "I put a feeder out there last year, but some kids from the school took it away."
Sarah turned toward him. "About last night," she began. He waved her off.
"Please, Sarah, believe me, I understand. You were with Jeffrey a long time."
"Thank you," she said, meaning it. Jeb looked back into the pharmacy, lowering his voice.
"I'm sorry about what happened, too. You know, with the girl."
He shook his head slowly, side to side.
"It's just hard to think about things like that happening in your own town."
"I know," Sarah answered, not really wanting to get into it.
"I guess I can forgive you, skipping out on our date to save somebody's life."
He put his hand over the right side of his chest.
"Did you really put your hand on her heart?"
Sarah moved his hand to the left side. "Yes."
"Good Lord," Jeb breathed. "How did it feel?"
Sarah gave him the truth. "Scary," she said. "Very scary." His voice was filled with admiration when he said,
"You are a remarkable woman, Sarah. Do you know that?"
She felt silly being praised. "I'll give you a rain check if you want," she offered, trying to move him off the topic of Julia Matthews. "For our date, I mean." He smiled, genuinely pleased.
"That'd be great."
A breeze came and Sarah rubbed her arms. "It's getting cold again."
"Here."
He led her back inside, shutting the door behind them.
"You doing anything this weekend?"
"I don't know," Sarah said. Then, "Listen, I came to see if Jeffrey picked up his medication."
"Well?"
Jeb clasped his hands together.
"I guess that means you're busy this weekend."
"No, it doesn't." Sarah paused, then said, "It's just complicated."
"Yeah."
He forced a smile.
"No problem. I'll check his script."
She couldn't stand to see the disappointment on his face. She turned the medic alert display to give herself something to do. Bookmarks with religious sayings were alongside diabetes bracelets. Jeb opened a large drawer under the counter and pulled out an orange pill bottle. He double-checked the label, then said,
"He called it in but didn't pick it up yet."
"Thanks," Sarah managed, taking the bottle. She held it in her hand, staring at Jeb. She spoke before she could back out of it. "Why don't you call me," she asked, "about this weekend?"
"Yeah, I will."
She reached out with her free hand, smoothing the lapel of his lab coat. "I mean it, Jeb. Call me." He was quiet for a few seconds, then suddenly he leaned down, kissing her lightly on the lips.
"I'll call you tomorrow."
"Great," Sarah said. She realized she was gripping the pill bottle so tightly that the top was about to pop off. She had kissed Jeb before. It was really no big deal. Something in the back of her mind was scared that Marty would see, though. Something in her mind was scared that the news of the kiss would get back to Jeffrey.
"I can give you a bag for that," Jeb offered, pointing to the bottle.
"No,"
Sarah mumbled, tucking the bottle into her jacket pocket. She murmured a thanks and was out the door before Marty could look up from her magazine. Jeffrey and Nick Shelton were out in the hall when Sarah got to the station. Nick stood with his hands tucked into the back pockets of his jeans, his regulation GBI dark blue dress shirt tight across his chest. His non-regulation beard and mustache were trimmed neatly to his face, and his equally forbidden gold rope chain was hanging from his neck. At just under 5 feet 6 inches, he was short enough for Sarah to rest her chin on the top of his head. This had not prevented him from asking her out a number of times.
"Hey, girl,"
Nick said, putting his arm around her waist. Jeffrey had about as much to worry about competition-wise from Nick Shelton as he did from a reindeer, but he still seemed to bristle at the familiar way Nick held her. Sarah thought Nick was overly solicitous for this very reason.
"Why don't we start the meeting?"
Jeffrey grumbled.
"Sarah has to get back to work."
Sarah caught up with Jeffrey as they walked down the hallway toward the back. She tucked the pill bottle into his coat pocket.
"What's this?"
he asked, taking it out. Then,
"Oh."
"Oh," Sarah repeated, opening the door. Frank Wallace and a reedy-looking young man in his khakis and a shirt like Nick's were sitting in the briefing room when they entered. Frank stood, shaking Nick's hand. He gave Sarah a firm nod, which she did not return. Something told Sarah that Frank had a hand in what happened last night, and she did not like it.
"This is Mark Webster," Nick said, indicating the other man. He was a boy, really, hardly older than 21.
He had that still wet behind the ears look about him, and a piece of his hair stuck out in the back in a classic cowlick. "Nice to meet you," Sarah said, shaking his hand. It was like squeezing a fish, but if Nick had brought Mark Webster all the way down here from Macon, he couldn't be as goofy as he looked.
Frank said, "Why don't you tell them what you were telling me?"
The boy cleared his throat and actually tugged at his collar. He addressed his words towards Sarah.
"I was saying it's interesting your twist picked Belladonna for his drug of choice. It's very unusual. I've only seen 3 cases in my work, and most of those were rule-outs, stupid kids who thought they'd have some fun."
Sarah nodded her head, knowing that rule-outs meant ruling out foul play and a death. As a coroner, as well as a pediatrician, she was especially careful when young children came into the morgue, with cause of death unknown. Mark leaned against the table, addressing his remarks to the rest of the group.
"Belladonna is in the deadly nightshade family. During the Middle Ages, women chewed small quantities of the seeds in order to dilate their pupils. A woman with dilated eyes was considered more attractive, and that's where they got the name, Belladonna. It means beautiful woman."
Sarah supplied. Both victims had extremely dilated pupils.
"Even a slight dose would cause this," Mark answered.
He picked up a white Tyvek envelope and pulled out some photographs, which he handed to Jeffrey to circulate.
Mark said, "Belladonna is bell-shaped, usually purple, and smells kind of funny. It's not something you'd keep around in your yard if you had kids or small animals. Whoever is growing it probably has a fence around it, maybe 3 feet tall at the least, in order to keep from poisoning everybody around."
"Does it need any specific kind of soil or feed?"
Jeffrey asked, passing the photo to Frank.
"It's a weed. It can grow practically anywhere. That's what makes it so popular. The only thing is, it's a bad drug."
Mark paused at this.
"The high is prolonged, lasts about 3 to 4 hours, depending on how much you take. Users report very real hallucinations. A lot of times they'll actually think it happened, if they can remember it."
Sarah asked, "It causes amnesia?"
"Oh, yes, ma'am. Selective amnesia, which means they only remember bits and pieces. Like, she might remember it was a man that took her, but she won't remember what he looked like, even if she was staring him in the face. Or she might say he was purple with green eyes."
He paused.
"It's a hallucinogen, but not like your typical PCP or LSD. Users report that there's no discerning between the hallucination and the real thing. With, say, angel dust, ecstasy, what have you, you know you're hallucinating.
Belladonna makes everything seem real. If I gave you a cup of Datura when you came around, you might swear to me you had a conversation with the coat rack. I could hook you up to a lie detector, and you'd come out as